Hi, this is Christopher Perrin with Inside Classical Education. On this podcast program, I interview a variety of leaders, administrators, and educators on topics relating to classical Christian education and its ongoing recovery and renewal in the 21st century. Archives of previous interviews can be found at our blog and podcast site at www.insideclassicaled.com. This is Christopher Perrin. I was recently able to speak with Ken Myers of Mars Hill Audio about his own education and upbringing and early career. Here's that conversation. Well, Ken, tell us a bit about your own education. What shaped your path and brought you to do what you're doing today?
Well, I went to public schools, went to state university. Not terribly well educated in some ways. I think influential things that occurred to me. I think that my involvement with music, I had a music teacher in high school who had actually studied for the priesthood and then decided not to go, and he became a music teacher. And when he was teaching us, you know, Mozart or Palestrina or whatever, he would always give us a little understanding of where in history this is happening. So I learned about the Counter-Reformation in a high school music class, learned what Palestrina was up to. And he had a great gift for making connections to things. And I realized later in life that that was so important to me, that that it gave me, as I started self-consciously trying to think Christianly, it gave me a kind of intuitive sense of how things could be seen to be part of a big picture. I guess in one way it gave me a sense of a kind of the narrative of history, and that that there's a story here. This isn't just one fact after another, but there's a kind of narrative and a kind of unflow, a kind of drama that's inherent there. I grew up in a family where not only my parents, but most of my extended family were committed Christians. And I had three uncles and aunts who were missionaries, and so grew up early on with a sense that, strong sense that vocation was something serious. So that whatever I chose to do, I'd had to do it because it's what God wanted me to do. I didn't just, that wasn't an afterthought. That was always present. In fact, church I grew up in, if you weren't going to be a missionary, you had to have a pretty good reason to not become a missionary. So, and I think that was very influential. When I later came across the idea of a Christian worldview, that already made sense, because I already, you know, I'd been raised with the sense that we have to see all of life in light of God, that there's not this, you know, that our faith isn't some optional extra or something that's just a motivational thing that is added on. So, and I ended up, I started school actually as a engineering major. I was good in math and science, and liked gadgets. But my dad, actually, I think my freshman year, he said, you know, you should think about being a writer. And I thought that was hilarious. I thought, partly because I had such great respect for writers, and I thought, there's no way in the world I'll ever write something that can be published. But he realized that I was not going to be happy as an engineer. So within about a semester, I dropped out of that program and ended up in communication studies, focusing on film theory and criticism. And in that setting, was thinking hard about what does a Christian worldview mean? What difference does it make to thinking about theory of film and communications? At that time, early 70s, that field was dominated by Marxists, for the most part, Marxists and post-structuralists, if I recall. So I was really trying to wrestle with the idea, what difference would a what a Christian understanding, particularly understanding of incarnation. I started thinking about incarnation then because I, you know, film works in space and time. It's embodied life in time. And so I started thinking about how what film does doesn't just tell stories, but it tells stories by situating the concrete, visible realities of people's lives. And so I think I started thinking about incarnational themes then. C.S. Lewis was an early influence, and I think, you know, I started reading Lewis for reasons of conventional apologetics. I was looking for good arguments to defend my faith. What I acquired from Lewis, unwittingly, and it was a long time before I realized that what he really gave me was a critique of modernity, because a lot of his writings, I mean, particularly, it's very obvious in Abolition of Man, a book that I never made sense of for a long time, but I love the Space Trilogy. I read that in college. And in a lot of the apologetics, in Screwtape Letters and in other things, when he explains conventional obstacles to Christian faith, whether obstacles to belief or obstacles to obedience, the kinds of things he describes are often not kind of merely perennial human problems. They very often are particularly modern problems. When he's describing Mark Studdick's wrestling with things, he's talking about a man wrestling with the effects of modernity. So I got from Lewis, I don't think he ever used the word modernity, but I did acquire from Lewis a kind of suspicion about conventionally modern thought that later, when I read people like George Parkin Grant or Christopher Lash or philosophers and sociologists who talked about the disordering effects of modernity, I was already receptive because of what I got from Lewis. Mm. I think that probably was a hugely important thing intellectually. But even in high, see, I graduated in 1974 from the University of Maryland. It was the first class for which the required coursework had been dropped. You know, the late 60s, early 70s, there's this big movement, largely politically motivated, to redo the curriculums, to make it more kind of market driven, let students have more choices about, to make it more democratic, one way of putting it. Well, I was a freshman in 1970. I remember thinking, that's not right. Something's wrong with that. And so I took all the courses that had been required anyway. I felt my way of rebelling was by
taking more literature courses.
Was submitting. Yeah, I took social science courses. I took all kinds of courses I wasn't really that interested in. But my feeling was, who am I? I mean, I'm 17 years old. Who am I to map out my education? I need somebody smarter than me to have figured it out. And I think I saw then, because I was watching the various political movements of the day, and I realized that they were rooted in a kind of rebellion and a kind of almost a anarchy that I thought, well, this can't be right. So I did take a lot of courses that were no longer required. It wasn't, I mean, in a sense, this was still the very faint echoes of a traditional liberal arts curriculum, but there was something there. I remember in college, I was involved in radio in college. I remember the week we graduated, I wrote a commentary. In fact, I have it on tape here somewhere. I listened to it recently. It's kind of embarrassing, but wrote a commentary about, what's the meaning of education? What have I gotten in 4 years? And I expressed a great frustration that I don't think I got what I should have gotten. So I've been interested in the subject of what education should accomplish and what modern education does in fact accomplish, at least since the time I was being poorly educated in college. I read Jacques Barzan and read, as I mentioned, read people like Mortimer Adler later, who were trying to diagnose some of this. I think another thing I think was a key part of this is I got interested in language early on. And I remember, I think it may have started reading, when I used to go to my grandmother's house when I was a little kid, the Reader's Digest, "It Pays to Increase Your Word Power." And I really got interested, and then I got interested in etymologies and origins and how language works. I mean, I'm talking junior high. And I just got, I remember buying paperback books on language and how the curious interrelationships of various etymologies. And
I know, by the way, you live on Amicus Road.
Yes, I do. Yeah. And down the road is, let's see, there's another Latin. Well, in Quinque.
Yes, in Quinque.
Yeah. Which it was the fifth stagecoach stop between Richmond and Harrisonburg at one time. So we have two Latin place names right here, and some literate. Well, there's Amicus is actually the next little village down the road,
okay.
And some literate postmaster or someone dubbed it that in the 19th century. Yeah, the language thing. I think that's been and then when I was at NPR. Well, in high school, okay, this is important too, part of my education. I had a 11th grade English teacher who subscribed to and kept in the classroom the old Saturday Review of Literature, which was, this is the late 60s. Norman Cousins was the editor. And it was, there's no magazine like it today, which I think is interesting commentary. It was a little bit like New Yorker or Harper's, but it was really, it was a magazine for people who were, who wanted to be well-read, but it wasn't for specialists. But a lot of the articles were written by, important novelists and poets. And John Ciardi, the poet, had a column in that magazine called Manner of Speaking. And it was a column Ciardi developed a later part of his life, developed a real interest in the origins of English idioms. And so every month, or every other week, I guess that magazine was published every fortnightly, I think. Every column was on some research he'd done in some obscure idiom or some common idiom and trying to figure out where does it come from? Why do we use this phrase? And, I was fascinated. And I used to clip those articles. I probably have some of these files over here. And then, so that's late 60s. Mid-70s, I ended up at NPR. I was in a situation where we were producing a special series. I was then low on the totem pole production assistant, but I was in an editorial meeting where we were looking for someone to host a special series of programs, and I suggested John Ciardi.
Ken Myers on his education and upbringing and his early career at National Public Radio. The entire interview in which Ken discusses his education and career can be viewed in its entirety on video on the website of InsideClassicalEd.com in January of 2011. This is Christopher Perrin for Inside Classical Education.